The Barkinhare murders were a series of 16 murders committed over a period of about 10 months in 1828 in Edinburgh, Scotland. They were undertaken by William Bark and William Hare, who sold the corpses to Robert Knox for a dissection at his anatomy lectures. Edinburgh was a leading European centre of anatomical study in the early 19th century, in a time when the demand for cadavers led to a shortfall in legal supply. Scottish law required that corpses used for medical research should only come from those who died in prison, suicide victims, or from foundlings and orphans. The shortage of corpses led to an increase in body snatching by what were known as resurrection men. Measures to ensure graves were left undisturbed, such as the use of mort safes, exacerbated the shortage. When a lodger in Hare's house died, he turned to his friend Burke for advice, and they decided to sell the body to Knox. They received what was, for them, the generous sum of £7.10. A little over 2 months later, when Hare was concerned that a lodger with a fever would deter others from staying in the house, he and Burke murdered her and sold the body to Knox. The men continued their murder spree, probably with the knowledge of their wives. Burke and Hare's actions were uncovered after other lodgers discovered their last victim, Margaret Doherty, and contacted the police. A forensic examination of Doherty's body indicated that she had probably been suffocated, but this could not be proven. Although the police suspected Burke and Hare of other murders, there was no evidence on which they could take action. An offer was put to Hare granting immunity from prosecution if he turned King's evidence. He provided the details of Doherty's murder and confessed to all 16 deaths. Formal charges were made against Burke and his wife for 3 murders. At the subsequent trial, Burke was found guilty of 1 murder and sentenced to death. The case against his wife was found not proven, a Scottish legal verdict to acquit an individual but not declare them innocent. Burke was hanged shortly afterwards. His corpse was dissected and his skeleton displayed at the Anatomical Museum of Edinburgh Medical School, where, as of 2024, it remains. The murders raised public awareness of the need for bodies for medical research and contributed to the passing of the Anatomy Act 1832. The events have made appearances in literature and have been portrayed on the screen, either in heavily fictionalised accounts or as the inspiration for fictional works. In the early 19th century, Edinburgh had several pioneering anatomy teachers, including Alexander Munro, his son who was also called Alexander, John Bell, John Goodsir, and Robert Knox, all of whom developed the subject into a modern science. Because of their efforts, Edinburgh became one of the leading European centres of anatomical study, alongside Leiden in the Netherlands and the Italian city of Padua. The teaching of anatomy, crucial in the study of surgery, required a sufficient supply of cadavers, the demand for which increased as the science developed. Scottish law determined that suitable corpses on which to undertake the dissections were those who had died in prison, suicide victims, and the bodies of foundlings and orphans. With the rise in prestige and popularity of medicinal training in Edinburgh, the legal supply of corpses failed to keep pace with the demand. Students, lecturers, and grave robbers, also known as resurrection men, began an illicit trade in exhumed cadavers. The situation was confused by the legal position. Disturbing a grave was a criminal offence, as was the taking of property from the deceased. Stealing the body itself was not an offence, as it did not legally belong to anyone. The price per corpse changed depending on the season. It was £8 during the summer when the warmer temperatures brought on quicker decomposition, and £10 in the winter months when the demand by anatomists was greater because the lower temperatures meant that they could store corpses longer, so they undertook more dissections. By the 1820s, the residents of Edinburgh had taken to the streets to protest at the increase in grave robbing. To avoid corpses being disinterred, bereaved families used several techniques in order to deter the thieves. Guards were hired to watch the graves, and watchtowers were built in several cemeteries. Some families hired a large stone slab that could be placed over a grave for a short period until the body began to decay past the point of being useful for an anatomist. Other families used a mort safe, an iron cage that surrounded the coffin. The high levels of vigilance from the public and the techniques used to deter the grave robbers led to what the historian Ruth Richardson describes as a growing atmosphere of crisis among anatomists because of the shortage of corpses. The historian Tim Marshall considers the situation meant Burke and Hare took grave robbing to its logical conclusion, Instead of digging up the dead, they accepted lucrative incentives to destroy the living. Robert Knox was an anatomist who had qualified as a doctor in 1814. After contracting smallpox as a child, he was blind in one eye and badly disfigured. He undertook service as an army physician at the Battle of Waterloo in 1815, followed by a post in England, and then during the Cape Frontier War in 1819 in South Africa. He eventually settled in his hometown of Edinburgh in 1820. In 1825, he became a fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons of Edinburgh, where he lectured on anatomy. He undertook dissections twice a day, and his advertising promised a full demonstration on fresh anatomical subjects as part of every course of lectures he delivered. He stated that his lessons drew over 400 pupils. Claire Taylor, his biographer in the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography, observes that he built up a formidable reputation as a teacher and lecturer and almost single-handedly raised the profile of the study of anatomy in Britain. Another biographer, Isabel Ray, considers that without Knox, the study of anatomy in Britain might not have progressed as it did. William Burke was born in 1792 in Erne, County Tyrone, Ireland, one of two sons to middle-class parents. Burke, along with his brother Constantine, had a comfortable upbringing and both joined the British Army as teenagers. Burke served in the Donegal Militia, where he met and married a woman from County Mayo, where they later settled. The marriage was short-lived, and in 1818, after an argument with his father-in-law over land ownership, Burke deserted his wife and family. He moved to Scotland and became a labourer working on the Union Canal. He settled in the small village of Maddiston near Falkirk and set up home with Helen MacDougall, who he affectionately nicknamed Nellie. She became his second wife. After a few years, and when the works on the canal were finished, the couple moved to Tanner's Close, Edinburgh, in November 1827. They became hawkers, selling second-hand clothes to the impoverished locals. Burke then became a cobbler, a trade in which he experienced some success, earning upwards of £1 a week. He became known locally as an industrious and good-humoured man who often entertained his clients by singing and dancing for them on their doorsteps while plying his trade. Although raised as a Roman Catholic, Burke became a regular worshipper at Presbyterian religious meetings held in the Grass Market, where he was seldom seen without a Bible. William Hare was probably born in County Armagh, County Derry, or in Newry. His age and year of birth are unknown. When arrested in 1828, he gave his age as 21, but one source states that he was born between 1792 and 1804. Information on his earlier life is scant, although it is possible that he worked in Ireland as an agricultural labourer before travelling to Britain. He worked on the Union Canal for 7 years before moving to Edinburgh in the mid-1820s, where he worked as a coalman's assistant. He launched at Tanner's Close in the house of a man named Logue and his wife Margaret Laird in the nearby Westport area of the town. When Logue died in 1826, Hare may have married Margaret. Based on contemporary accounts, Brian Bailey, in his History of the Murders, describes Hare as illiterate and uncouth, a lean, quarrelsome, violent and immoral character with the scars from the old wounds about his head and brow. Bailey describes Margaret, who was also an Irish immigrant, as hard-featured and debauched virago. In 1827, Burke and MacDougall went to Midlothian to work on the harvest, where they met Hare. The men became friends, and when Burke and MacDougall returned to Edinburgh, they moved into Hare's Tanner Close lodging house, where the two couples soon acquired a reputation for hard drinking and boisterous behaviour. On the 29th of November 1827, Donald, a lodger in Hare's house, died of dropsy shortly after receiving a quarterly army pension while owing £4 of back rent. After Hare bemoaned his financial loss to Burke, the pair decided to sell Donald's body to one of the local anatomists. A carpenter provided a coffin for a burial which was to be paid for by the local parish. After he left, the pair opened the coffin, removed the body which they hid under the bed, filled the coffin with bark from a local tanner's, and resealed it. After dark, on the day the coffin was removed for burial, they took the corpse to Edinburgh University, where they looked for a purchaser. According to Burke's later testimony, they asked for directions to Professor Munro, but a student sent them to Knox's premises in Surgeon Square. Although the men dealt with juniors when discussing the possibility of selling the body, it was Knox who arrived to fix the price at £7.10. Hare received £4.05, while Burke took the balance of £3.05. Hare's largest share was to cover his loss from Donald's unpaid rent. According to Burke's official confession, as he and Hare left the university, one of Knox's assistants told them that the anatomists would be glad to see them again when they had another to dispose of. There is no such agreement as to the order in which the murders took place. Burke made two confessions but gave different sequences for the murders in each statement. The first was an official one giving on the 3rd of January 1829 to the sheriff substitute, procurator fiscal, and the assistant sheriff clerk. The second was in the form of an interview with the Edinburgh Current that was published on the 7th of February 1829. These in turn differed from the order given in Hare's statement, although the pair were agreed on many of the points of the murders. Contemporary reports also differ from the confessions of the two men. More recent sources, including the accounts written by Brian Bailey, Lisa Rosner, and Owen Dudley Edwards, either follow one of the historic versions or present their own order of evidence. Most of the sources agree that the first murder in January or February 1828 was either that of a miller named Joseph lodging in Hare's house or a salt seller named Abigail Simpson. The historian Lisa Rosner considers Joseph the more likely. A pillow was used to smother the victim, while later ones were suffocated by a hand over the nose and mouth. The novelist Sir Walter Scott, who took a keen interest in the case, also thought the miller was the more likely first victim and highlighted that there was an additional motive to reconcile them to the deed, as Joseph had developed a fever and had become delirious. Hare and his wife were concerned that having a potentially infectious lodger would be bad for business. Hare again turned to Burke, and after providing their victim with whiskey, Hare suffocated Joseph while Burke lay across the upper torso to restrict movement. They again took the corpse to Knox, who this time paid them £10. Rosner considers the method of murder to be ingenious. Burke's weight on the victim stifled movement, and thus the ability to make noise, while it also prevented the chest from expanding should any air get past Hare's suffocating grip. In Rosner's opinion, the method would have been practically undetectable until the era of modern forensics. The order of the two victims next after Joseph is also unclear. Rosner puts the sequence as Abigail Simpson, followed by an English male lodger from Cheshire, while Bailey and Dudley Edwards each have the order as the English male lodger, followed by Simpson. The unnamed Englishman was a travelling seller of matches and tinder who fell ill with jaundice at Hare's lodging house. As with Joseph, Hare was concerned with the effects that this illness might have on his business, and he and Burke employed the same modus operandi that they used with the miller, Hare suffocating their victim while Burke lay over the body to stop movement and noise. Simpson was a pensioner who lived in the nearby village of Gilmerton and visited Edinburgh to supplement her pension by selling salt. On the 12th of February 1828, the only exact date Burke quoted in his confession, she was invited into the Hare's house and plied with enough alcohol to ensure she was too drunk to return home. After murdering her, Burke and Hare placed the body in a tea chest and sold it to Knox. They received £10 for each body, and Burke's confession records of Simpson's body that Dr. Knox approved of it being so fresh, but he did not ask any questions. In either February or March that year, an old woman was invited into the house by Margaret Hare. She gave her enough whiskey to fall asleep, and when Hare returned that afternoon, he covered the sleeping woman's mouth and nose with the bed tick, or stiff mattress cover, and left her. She was dead by nightfall, and Burke joined his companion to transport the corpse to Knox, who paid another £10. Burke met with two women in early April, Mary Patterson and Janet Brown, in the Canongate area of Edinburgh. He bought the two women alcohol before inviting them back to his lodging for breakfast. The three left the tavern with two bottles of whiskey and went instead to his brother Constantine's house. After his brother left for work, Burke and the women finished the whiskey and Patterson fell asleep at the table. Burke and Brown continued talking, but they were interrupted by MacDougall, who accused them of having an affair. A row broke out between Burke and MacDougall, during which he threw a glass at her, cutting her over the eye. Brown stated that she did not know Burke was married and left. MacDougall also left and went to fetch Hare and his wife. They arrived shortly afterwards and the two men locked their wives out of the room and then murdered Patterson in her sleep. That afternoon, the pair took the body to Knox in a tea chest while MacDougall kept Patterson's skirt and petticoats. They were paid £8 for the corpse, which was still warm when they delivered it. Ferguson, one of Knox's assistants, asked where they obtained the body. as he thought he had recognized her. Burke explained that the girl had drunk herself to death and that he had purchased it from an old woman in Canongate. Knox was delighted with the corpse and stored it in whiskey for 3 months before dissecting it. When Brown later searched for her friend, she was told that she had left for Glasgow with a travelling salesman. At some point in the early to mid 1828, a Mrs. Haldane, whom Burke described as a stout old woman, lodged at Hare's premises. After she became drunk, she fell asleep in the stable and she was smothered and sold to Knox. Several months later, Haldane's daughter, either called Margaret or Peggy, also lodged at Hare's house. She and Burke drank together heavily and he killed her without Hare's assistance. Her body was put into a tea chest and taken to Knox, where Burke was paid £8. The next murder occurred in May 1828 when an old woman joined the house as a lodger. One evening, while she was intoxicated, Burke smothered her. Hare was not present in the house at the time and her body was sold to Knox for £10. Then came the murder of Effie, a cinder gatherer who scavenged through bins and rubbish tips to sell her findings. Effie was known to Burke and had previously sold him scraps of leather for his cobbling business. Burke tempted her into the stable with whiskey, and when she was drunk enough, he and Hare killed her. Knox gave £10 for the body. Another victim was found by Burke too drunk to stand. She was being helped by a local constable back to her lodgings when Burke offered to take her there himself. The policeman obliged, and Burke took her back to Hare's house where she was killed. Her corpse raised a further £10 from Knox. Burke and Hare murdered two lodgers in June, an old woman and a dumb boy, her grandson. Burke later recalled in his confession. While the boy sat by the fire in the kitchen, his grandmother was murdered in the bedroom by the usual method. Burke and Hare then picked up the boy and carried him to the same room where he was also killed. Burke later said that this murder was the one that disturbed him the most, as he was haunted by his recollection of the boy's expression. The tea chest was usually used by the duo to transport the bodies was found to be too small, so the bodies were forced into a herring barrel and taken to the Surgeon's Square, where they fetched £8 each. According to Burke's confession, the barrel was loaded onto a cart which Hare's horse refused to pull further than the grass market. Hare called a porter with a handcart to help him transport the container. Once back in Tanner's Close, Hare took his anger out on the horse by shooting it dead in the yard. On the 24th of June, Burke and MacDougall departed for Falkirk to visit the latter's father. Burke knew that Hare was short of cash and had even pawned some of his clothes. When the couple returned, they found that Hare was wearing new clothes and had surplus money. After he was asked, Hare denied that he had sold another body. Burke checked with Knox, who confirmed Hare had sold a woman's body for £8. It led to an argument between the two men and they came to blows. Burke and his wife moved into the home of his cousin, John Brogan, two streets away from Tanner's Close. The breach between the two men did not last long. In late September or early October, Hare was visiting Burke when Mrs. Ulster, a washerwoman, came to the property to do laundry. The men got her drunk and killed her. The corpse was with Knox that afternoon, for which the men received £8. A week or two later, one of MacDougall's relatives, Anne Dougal, was visiting from Falkirk. After a few days, the men killed her by their usual technique and received £10 for the body. Burke later claimed that about this time, Hare's wife suggested killing Helen MacDougall on the grounds that they could not trust her as she was a Scotchwoman, but he refused. Burke and Hare's next victim was a familiar figure in the streets of Edinburgh, James Wilson, an 18-year-old man with a limp caused by deformed feet. He was mentally disabled and, according to Alanna Knight in her history of the murders, was inoffensive. He was known locally as Daft Jamie. Wilson lived on the streets and supported himself by begging. In November, Hare lured Wilson to his lodgings with the promise of whiskey and sent his wife to fetch Burke. The two murderers led Wilson into a bedroom, the door of which Margaret locked before pushing the key back under the door. As Wilson did not like excess whiskey, he preferred snuff, he was not as drunk as most of the duo's victims. He was also strong and fought back against the two attackers, but was overpowered and killed in the normal way. His body was stripped and his few possessions stolen. Burke kept a snuff box and Hare a snuff spoon. When the body was examined the following day by Knox and his students, several of them recognized it to be Wilson, but Knox denied it could be anyone that the students knew. When word started circulating that Wilson was missing, Knox dissected the body ahead of the others that were waiting in storage. The head and feet were removed before the main dissection. The final victim killed on the 31st of October 1828 was Margaret Doherty, a middle-aged Irish woman. Burke lured her into the Brogan lodging house by claiming that his mother was also a Doherty from the same area of Ireland, and the pair began drinking. At one point, Burke left Doherty in the company of MacDougall while Weehy went out, ostensibly to buy more whiskey, but actually to get hair. Two other lodgers, Anne and James Gray, were an inconvenience to the men, so they paid them to stay at Hare's lodging for the night, claiming Doherty was a relative. The drinking continued into the evening, by which time Margaret had joined in. At around 9 p.m, the Greys returned briefly to collect some clothing for their children and saw Burke, Hare, their wives and Doherty all drunk, singing and dancing. Although Burke and Hare came to blows at some point in the evening, they subsequently murdered Doherty and put her body in a pile of straw at the end of the bed. The next day, the Greys returned and Anne became suspicious when Burke would not let her approach a bed where she had left her stockings. When they were left alone in the house in the early evening, the Greys searched the straw and found Doherty's body, showing blood and saliva on the face. On their way to alert the police, they ran into MacDougall, who tried to bribe them with an offer of £10 a week. They refused. While the Greys reported the murder to the police, Burke and Hare removed the body and took it to Knox's surgery. The police search located Doherty's bloodstained clothing hidden under the bed. When questioned, Burke and his wife claimed that Doherty had left the house but gave different times for her departure. This raised enough suspicion for the police to take them in for questioning. Early the following morning, the police went to Knox's dissecting rooms where they found Doherty's body. James identified her as the woman he had seen with Burke and Hare. Hare and his wife were arrested that day, as was Brogan. All denied any knowledge of the events. In total, 16 people were murdered by Burke and Hare. Burke stated later that he and Hare were generally in a state of intoxication when the murders were carried out, and that he could not sleep at night without a bottle of whiskey by his bedside and a twopenny candle to burn all night beside him. When he awoke, he would take a drink from the bottle, sometimes half a bottle at draught, and that would make him sleep. He also took opium to ease his conscience. On the 3rd of November 1828, a warrant was issued for the detention of Burke, Hare and their wives. Brogan was released without any further action. The four suspects were kept apart and statements taken. These conflicted with the initial answers given on the day of their arrests. After Alexander Black, a police surgeon, examined Doherty's body, two forensic specialists were appointed, Robert Christensen and William Newbiging. They reported it was probable that the victim had been murdered by suffocation, but this could not be medically proven. On the basis of the report from the two doctors, the Burkes and Hares were charged with murder. As part of his investigation, Christensen interviewed Knox, who asserted that Burke and Hare had watched poor lodging houses in Edinburgh and purchased bodies before anyone claimed them for burial. Christensen thought Knox was deficient in principle and heart, but did not think that he had broken the law. Although the police were sure murder had taken place and that at least one of the four was guilty, they were uncertain whether they could secure a conviction. Police also suspected that there had been other murders committed, but the lack of bodies hampered this line of inquiry. As news of the possibility of other murders came to the public's attention, newspapers began to publish lurid and inaccurate stories of the crimes. Speculative reports led members of the public to assume that all missing people had been victims. Janet Brown went to the police and identified her friend Mary Patterson's clothing, while a local baker informed them that Jamie Wilson's trousers were being worn by Burke's nephew. On the 19th of November, a warrant for the murder of Jamie Wilson was made against the four suspects. Sir William Ray, the Lord Advocate, followed a regular technique. He focused on one individual to extract a confession on which the others could be convicted. Hare was chosen, and on the 1st of December he was offered immunity from prosecution if he turned King's evidence and provided the full details of the murder of Doherty and any other. Because he could not be brought to testify against his wife, she was also exempt from prosecution. Hare made a full confession of all the deaths, and Ray decided sufficient evidence existed to secure prosecution. On the 4th of December, formal charges were laid against Burke and MacDougall for the murders of Mary Patterson, James Wilson and Mrs. Doherty. Knox faced no charges for the murders because Burke's statement to the police exonerated the surgeon. Public awareness of the news grew as newspapers and broadsides began releasing further details. Opinion was against Knox, and according to Bailey, many in Edinburgh thought he was a sinister ringmaster who got bark and hair dancing to his tune. Several broadsides were published with editorials stating that he should have been in the dock alongside the murderers, which influenced public opinion. A new word was coined for the murders, barking, to smother a victim or to commit an anatomy murder, and a rhyme began circulating around the streets of Edinburgh. The trial began at 10 a.m. on Christmas Eve, 1828, before the High Court of Justiciary in Edinburgh's Parliament Houses. The case was heard by the Lord Justice Clerk, David Boyle, supported by Lords Meadowbank, Pitmilly and Mackenzie. The court was full shortly after the doors were opened at 9 a.m. and a large crowd gathered outside Parliament House. 300 constables were on duty to prevent disturbances, while infantry and cavalry were on standby as a further precaution. The case ran through the day and night to the following morning. Rosner notes that even a formal postponement of the case for dinner could have raised questions about the validity of the trial. When the charges were read out, the two defence counsels objected to Burke and MacDougall being tried together. Burke's defence lawyer protested that his client was charged with three unconnected murders, committed each at a different time and at a different place, in a trial with another defendant who is not even alleged to have had any concern with the two of the offences of which he is accused. Several hours were spent on legal arguments about the objection. The judge decided that to ensure a fair trial, the indictment should be split into separate charges for the three murders. He gave Ray the choice as to which should be heard first. Ray opted for the murder of Doherty, given that they had the corpse and the strongest evidence. In the early afternoon, Burke and MacDougall pleaded not guilty to the murder of Doherty. The first witnesses were then called from a list of 55 that included Hare and Knox. Not all the witnesses on the list were called, and Knox, with three of his assistants, avoided being questioned in court. One of Knox's assistants, David Patterson, who had been the main person Burke and Hare had dealt with at Knox's surgery, was called and confirmed the pair had supplied the doctor with several corpses. In the early evening, Hare took the stand to give evidence. Under cross-examination about the murder of Doherty, Hare claimed Burke had been the sole murderer and MacDougall had twice been involved by bringing Doherty back to the house after she had run out. Hare stated that he had assisted Burke in the delivery of the body to Knox. Although he was asked about the other murders, he was not obliged to answer the questions, as the charge related only to the death of Doherty. After Hare's questioning, his wife entered the witness box, carrying their baby daughter who had developed whooping cough. Margaret used the child's coughing fits as a way to give herself thinking time for some of the questions and told the court that she had a very poor memory and could not remember many of the events. The final prosecution witnesses were the two doctors, Black and Christensen. Both said they suspected foul play, but that there was no forensic evidence to support the suggestion of murder. There were no witnesses called for the defence, although the pre-trial declarations by Burke and MacDougall were read out in their place. The prosecution summed up their case, after which at 3 a.m. Burke's defence lawyer began his final statement, which lasted for 2 hours. MacDougall's defence lawyer began his address to the jury on his client's behalf at 5 a.m. Boyle then summing up, directing the jury to accept the arguments of the prosecution. The jury retired to consider its verdict at 8:30 a.m. on Christmas Day and returned 50 minutes later. It delivered a guilty verdict against Burke for the murder of Doherty. The same charge against MacDougall they found not proven. As he passed the death sentence against Burke, Boyle told him, "Your body should be publicly dissected and anatomized, and I trust that if it is ever customary to preserve skeletons, yours will be preserved, in order that posterity may keep in remembrance your atrocious crimes." MacDougall was released at the end of the trial and returned home. The following day, she went to buy whiskey and was confronted by a mob who were angry at a not proven verdict. She was taken to a police building in nearby Fountainbridge for her own protection, but after the mob laid siege to it, she escaped through a back window to the main police station of Edinburgh's High Street. She tried to see Burke, but permission was refused. She left Edinburgh the next day, and there are no clear accounts of her later life. On the 3rd of January 1829, on the advice of both Catholic priests and Presbyterian clergy, Burke made another confession. This was more detailed than the official one provided prior to his trial. He placed much of the blame of the murders on Hare. On the 16th of January 1829, a petition on his behalf to James Wilson's mother and sister protesting against Hare's immunity and intended release from prison was given lengthy consideration by the High Court of Justiciary and rejected by a vote of 4-2. Margaret was released on the 19th of January and travelled to Glasgow to find a passage back to Ireland. While waiting for a ship, she was recognised and attacked by a mob. She was given shelter in a police station before being given a police escort onto a Belfast-bound vessel. No clear accounts exist of what became of her after she landed in Ireland. Burke was hanged on the morning of the 28th of January 1829 in front of a crowd possibly as large as 25,000. Views from windows in the tenements overlooking the scaffold were hired at prices ranging from 5 shillings to 20 shillings. On the 1st of February, Burke's corpse was publicly dissected by Professor Munro in the Anatomy Theatre of the University's Old College. Police had to be called when large numbers of students gathered, demanding access to the lecture, for which a limited number of tickets had been issued. A minor riot ensued. Calm was restored only after one of the university professors negotiated with the crowd that they would be allowed to pass through the theatre in batches of 50 after the dissection. During the procedure, which lasted for 2 hours, Munro dipped his quill pen into Burke's blood and wrote, "This is written with the blood of William Burke, who was hanged at Edinburgh. This blood was taken from his head." Burke's skeleton was given to the Anatomical Museum of the Edinburgh Medical School, whereas as of 2024, it remains. His death mask and a book said to be bound with his tanned skin is on display at the Surgeons' Hall Museum. Hare was released on the 5th of February 1829. His extended stay in custody had been undertaken for his own protection and was assisted in leaving Edinburgh in disguise by the mail coach to Dumfries. At one of its stops, he was recognised by a fellow passenger, Erskine Douglas Sanford, a junior counsel who had represented Wilson's family. Sanford informed his fellow passengers of Hare's identity. On arrival in Dumfries, the news of Hare's presence spread and a large crowd gathered at the hostel where he was due to stay the night. Police arrived and arranged for a decoy coach to draw off the crowd while Hare escaped through a back window and into a carriage which took him to the town's prison for safekeeping. A crowd surrounded the building. Stones were thrown at the door and windows and street lamps were smashed before 100 special constables arrived to restore order. In the small hours of the morning, escorted by the sheriff, officer and a militia guard, Hare was taken out of town, set down on the Annan Road and instructed to make his way to the English border. There were no subsequent reliable sightings of him and his eventual fate is unknown. Knox refused to make any public statements about his dealings with Burke and Hare. The common thought in Edinburgh was that he was culpable in the events. He was lampooned in caricature and in February 1829 a crowd gathered outside his house and burned an effigy of him. A committee of inquiry cleared him of complicity and reported that they had seen no evidence that Dr. Knox or his assistants knew that the murder was committed in procuring any of the subjects brought to his rooms. He resigned from his position as curator of the College of Surgeons Museum and was gradually excluded from university life by his peers. He left Edinburgh in 1842 and lectured in Britain and mainland Europe. While working in London, he fell foul of the regulations of the Royal College of Surgeons and was debarred from lecturing. He was removed from the role of Fellows of the Royal Society of Edinburgh in 1848. From 1856, he worked as a pathological anatomist at the Brompton Cancer Hospital and had a medical practice in Hackney until his death in 1862.
If you like that, then listen to our main show every Wednesday on all good podcast providers. It's Alive Alive, the really, really fake true crime horror podcast. All the guts and gore, none of the guilt. See you on Wednesdays.